Well, hello, good afternoon. Slanja, and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM. My name is Scotty Hertz, joining you once again from the Hertz Bunker on this beautiful day in Guelph, Ontario. Also joining me on the line, I believe, I certainly hope so. As I always say, fingers crossed, Adam A. Donaldson, co-host of this show, also the host of End Credits, The Guelph Politico, among countless other things. Adam, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I don't think you've ever not been there, right? So I should just stop
so
that
far,
bit.
So
yeah, and the second that I stop doing that, it'll just be this sound coming from I don't know, the Mars lander or something. Anyway, coming up on the program, we're going to talk a bit about the Lockdown Caucus. What the heck is the Lockdown Caucus, you ask? Well, we will tell you soon enough. Also, the election in Newfoundland and Labrador has been shut down, or retooled at least, in an unprecedented move. And we will talk about the unprecedentedness of that. But before the break, which is at 5:30, we're going to talk a bit about assisted dying, the legislation that's doing a bit of back and forth in Ottawa. Between the House of Commons and the Senate, due to go back any time now. But of course, Adam, we can't let him go just yet. He's not off the radar. Things got quiet for a while, but Donald Trump, we were calling this the Trump impeachment wrap-up, but is it really? Is this ever going to end? For people that don't know, and I'm sure everyone does, the Senate in the United States voted 57-46. Seven Republicans, also unprecedented, to impeach Donald Trump. But in the Senate, a two-thirds majority is required to impeach a president. That did not happen. So many unprecedented things happening, including the second impeachment of Donald Trump, which had not occurred until just now. But that it remains to be seen if anything else is going to come of the Capitol invasion on January the 6th, and will there be punishments meted out for that? Or is Trump sitting pretty? Is he just going to be able to run in 4 years if he's still alive? What say you, Adam?
There are a lot of things going on. I think we know that there are legal troubles ahead for Donald Trump. He's being prosecuted by... Or he's being investigated by both the state of New York and the state of, not the state of Georgia, but at least one county in Georgia where there's a DA willing to investigate mm-hmm. for his role in not just the insurrection in Georgia in particular, this phone call he had with the Secretary of State for Georgia asking him to find the 11,000 some odd votes he needed to win. You know, the famous, come on, guys, I just need 11,000 votes call.
All I need. Yeah.
Right.
Classic like, Trump. Yeah.
Yeah. Classic mob behavior. And then, you know, so there's that. I mean, it's not over in that regard. Of course, Mitch McConnell, profile and courage, Mitch McConnell got up after being one of the 43 votes to acquit Trump, got up and said, you know, he's not escaped accountability through law enforcement yet. And I mean, so, you know, Mitch was right about that, but it does swim upstream. The entire circumstance of what happened on Saturday sort of gets under your skin, because on Friday night there was this revelation of a bit of insight into what was going on in Trump's mind on the day of the insurrection. There was a report that he called Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader of the House, called him practically begging for help, begging Trump to call off the supporters. Then Trump said, no, they're Antifa, dude. And Kevin McCarthy's like, no, dude, I'm looking at Trump 2020 flags.
Dude.
And then
yeah.
Well, this is and then Trump says, this is an exact quote. Well, Kevin, I guess these people are more upset about the election than you are, which is, as many people pointed out, it's like a straight up supervillain line. It's like straight up Blofeld,
million Trump flags.
No,
yeah.
I expect you to die. No, Mr. McCarthy, I expect you to die. So, I mean, there was that revelation, and then the House managers made a move that they were going to call this woman who this Republican congresswoman as a witness. And then there was a lot of Herman and Herman and Herman. And then they read her statement into the record. They didn't call her as a witness because and this looks like really, really bad. Chris Coons, who's a Democratic senator from Delaware, said something to the effect of, can we just like wrap it up? Because I have Valentine's Day plans. And
Who doesn't, buddy? Yeah,
I'm just no like one. The teen ear to this, and I think Chris Hayes said it best: is like, you know, the only bipartisanship left in the Senate is the deadline for recess. So, it was going. I mean, not that anyone had a doubt that this was going to go Trump's way, at least in terms of the impeachment vote. I mean, getting seven Republican senators is kind of a minor miracle. Mm-hmm. Let alone, like, getting 17 would have been like proof of God, but getting seven was really, really good. So they were never going to get the full 17. The point was to keep hammering, was to hammer home this idea of Trump was behind it. Trump was pulling the strings. These were people acting on Trump. Trump primed the pump, which is a statement I just made up myself. Trump primed the pump with
prime
these guys
the pump.
Months.
Yeah.
And then unleashed them to the Capitol. And then when everybody in the Republican Party was calling him on the phone saying, please stop, please stop, please stop.
Yep.
He didn't. And that point needed to be driven home, because at the end of this, you know, one of the biggest stories coming out of last week is that Republican state party officials have been censuring all the Republican Congress, all the Republican senators who voted to remove Trump. So, you know, the actual profiles and courage have been getting hammered by their own people in the meantime. And I mean, and it's just further proof that whether Trump runs in 2024 or not, it's irrelevant, because it's the Trump wing of the party. So it is going to be a fight for whoever's the Trumpiest is going to win, regardless of whether or not there's someone named Trump in the race.
And you do really see the schism when it's Mitch McConnell versus Trump.
Mm-hmm.
He had said, and it's difficult to know, sort like, not since he is off Twitter, it's hard to know. Parler is back, I guess. They got the IP of a Russian company. Fancy that. But I don't know if Trump is chiming in on that, because I'm not on it. No plans to go there either. But yeah, Trump's statement on the weekend was Mitch McConnell's a dour, sullen, and unsmiling political hack. Now, since Trump doesn't...
He's not wrong, by the way.
No, but since Trump doesn't own a thesaurus, I'm going to assume somebody wrote that copy for him, right? Like, McConnell did sell him out pretty solidly, and you do see the juxtaposition between, you know, classic GOP Republican and the Trumpist, right? The populist wacko faction, we'll call them. I will call them, in my opinion. And in terms of censoring Trump for what went on, supposedly there's going to be a full 9/11 type commission to examine what happened, which they really do need, Trump or no Trump. Because they certainly did drop the ball as a fairly well, there was no ball to drop. It was just,
well, there were security failures in spite of,
yeah,
Trump.
So that, you know,
Trump doing. There was a big fat security failure on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, I don't think they're ever going to see the openness that they once did there anymore. Like, it's just, it'll take a long time before any degree of confidence is restored. Kind of like 9/11. I think I mentioned this before about going to the Statue of Liberty, and like, there was metal detectors and a puffer, and like, that, it's going to be that kind of level of security, I think, in the Capitol now. But also being floated more than once, and over the past few weeks, I dug back a bit, actually, to saw an article in January in the, I think it was in the Bezos Washington Post, about the, as Trump would call it, The 14th Amendment, which I know about the 14th Amendment because it was conveyed the rights to people, particularly former slaves. But there is a section of that which specifically says, and I think it was designed to get at Confederate generals, etc., before they were, I think they were eventually pardoned at some point and were able to sit. But anyway, this is a bit of an obscure amendment. I think it's been applied a couple of times, mostly to socialists. But it specifies that anyone that was engaged in insurrection, rebellion, or aids the enemies of the United States, then they are not allowed to have political office at all levels, by the sounds of it, under their constitution. So I'm not actually sure how they would, it probably along the lines of the 25th Amendment, they would have to have a trial of some kind, and it's probably a 2/3 majority as well. So as to whether they're just kind of throwing that out there, saying, yeah, we should probably try this with Trump because he's not president anymore, but we can, you know, anyone who is an American is subject to this rule, it would seem.
Well, and there's also the NAACP that's bringing a suit against Trump that's basically using sort of like Reconstruction era laws meant to ban the Ku Klux Klan, bringing those charges against Trump. I mean, it's just about anything to throw it at the wall to see what sticks, to see if anything can stick. Because, you know, like it or not, he's at least an influence in the short term. You know, you see, again, Kevin McCarthy himself, like just a few weeks after begging Donald Trump for help and being, you know, fitted off, having to go to Mar-a-Lago to, you know, beg Trump for this campaign data that he has, that's, you know, that the Republican Party wants to help with future elections. You even have like Nikki Haley, Trump's former ambassador to the UN, who came out, who's kind of been doing career rehab, and you know, talking about how Trump was responsible for the insurrection, and the party's lost its way because it's become so beholden to Trump. And then there was a thing in Politico's playbook today that said that Nikki Haley was trying to get a meeting with Trump, and Trump turned her down. So it's like, you really can't have it both ways. And at least that's, you know, that's at least the appearance that Mitch McConnell is giving. And I mean, if there's a bigger test case for you can't have it both ways, I mean, you have Senator Lindsey Graham, who famously on January 6th got up and said, you know, he had enough. He was getting off. Donald Trump had been, in his estimation, a substantial president or something like that. But he said, I've been repeatedly asking for proof of voter fraud and I haven't got any. And then that weekend, he was accosted at the airport with like people calling him traitor and things, like a big loud mob that kind of surrounded him, and he had to have like a security escort to get to his plane. And then, of course, the next week on Fox, he's like, oh, I'm going golfing with Donald Trump next weekend. And I mean, we really need Trump plus in the Republican Party. That's the way of the future. And it's like, wow, that, you know, it wasn't like you were, you know, went way off the Trump course, Lindsay, but you, like, I almost got whiplash watching that.
The wettest of wet waffles, yes. And we should mention here, just before we wrap it up, the passing of the unrelenting Trump mouthpiece, Rush Limbaugh, to cancer at age 70. This was somebody who said, oh, smoking, it's not so bad, and has died of lung cancer, I believe. So that'd probably tell all you need to know about Rush Limbaugh. I remember first hearing about him, I had a driving job and I saw a bumper sticker that said, Rush is right, tune in 1 p.m. And I tuned in and I was like, oh my God, what is this? So and he did that for years and years and years. So I don't know if he probably listened at some point over the years, Adam, I would imagine.
I mean, just out of like sort of
not intensely and as a fan, but kind of in
no. It one of the things that I noticed yesterday is that a lot of people were I don't know if celebrating is the right word, but
I think
marking,
to some degree, yeah, because the guy was sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say they were marking Rush's passing with some of his greatest hits. And by greatest hits, I mean that ironically, because it was things like him saying that Michael J. Fox had faked his Parkinson's symptoms, and this rather long and quite disgusting monologue he went on about Sandra Fluke, who testified about wanting her birth control to be able to use government health insurance to be able to get birth control. And he said, you know, he goes on calling her a slut, and he's like, if the government's paying for her birth control, I think she should be giving something with something to us in return, you know, wink wink. And it's just like, I was reading through all these and I was thinking to myself, wow, I have genuinely forgotten a lot of the disgusting things Rush Limbaugh has said over the years.
Just
and
yeah,
that's I mean, and I think that perfectly kind of sums up Rush Limbaugh. There was just no bottom to the bottomless pile of feces that came out of his mouth on a daily basis on his three-hour show. And I mean, whatever the modern Republican Party looks like, it probably owes more to Rush Limbaugh than it does to Donald Trump.
Oh, that's true.
Rush Limbaugh primed the pump.
Just an absolute...
which again, is a phrase I just made up.
The Limbaugh pump. Just an awful person, in my opinion. But anyway.
He will not be missed. Oh, and just
good night and not good luck. Yeah.
Before we depart American politics, I think, you know, just for a bit of levity, the saga of Lion Ted Cruz, who got on a plane to Cancun while his state is literally freezing to death. And apparently he's on his way back now because he was only going to drop his family off, you know. But, you know, Lion Ted back on it.
So he went to Cancun to physically drop his family off rather than just wave bye-bye at the airport.
Well, that's his story.
He'll probably still win. Yeah, he'll probably... I don't know.
No, this is not... The interesting juxtaposition is that Beto O'Rourke, who currently has no government function at all and was the Democrat who ran against Ted Cruz in 2018, almost beat Ted Cruz, by the way. I mean, very famously, not to get into the weeds too much, but Beto O'Rourke basically hit all the targets he was going for to try and beat Ted Cruz. It's just that Ted Cruz was able to get a few more votes out of Texas. But I mean, meanwhile, as you know, Lion Ted is, you know, going to Cancun, Beto O'Rourke, again, who has no government role at all, is working the phones in Texas to check in on seniors and doing that basic senatorial humanitarian work that Lion Ted isn't doing. So
might serve him well in the not too distant future. So also in our not too distant future is the assistant dying bill as C7. It passed the House of Commons, went to the Senate, also passed in the Senate, but there have been several amendments proposed beyond the version, which I think was first tabled in December, maybe. So surprisingly, the Senate is going a step further on this legislation, which was surprising. Several steps further, actually. Something, you know, they were talking about the advanced requests about for people with dementia, or if there's a suspicion that they might, you might have dementia in your future, or it's in your family, that you can have specify in advance that you may want assisted dying, which medical assistance in dying, or MAID. I was having difficulty referring to it as MAID, but that's you keep seeing MAID as the thing. But also an 18-month cap on the ban for assisted dying solely for mental illness. So that's something that's in the legislation as well, that if you have some form of mental illness, and I did see a news outlet had spoken to a person who had PTSD and depression. And it's supposedly quite clear to this particular person, and probably lots of others, that they are not going to get better and would like the option for this. And I think that this is where it gets into this kind of sticky, like, because you can recover from those things. Not everybody does, but currently, it's one of those things where, you know, people are maybe reluctant to solidly commit to that, so they the Senate wants to put a oh my goodness I was going to say drop dead. That is the worst choice of words. Sorry. That's all I can think of. Okay, an end point on it, let's say, in 18 months of saying that has to go. So, yeah, this it's getting there, but there are some complexities to it for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about what this might mean for people with disabilities, and a great deal of concern for people with disabilities too, that this is kind of a backdoor to euthanasia. And apparently there's some kind of data to back this up. The Canadian Pediatric Society saying that they've seen a survey of their members that they're seeing more people with children who have life-threatening disabilities talking about the option of doctor or of made medical assisted.
Oh boy. Like yeah. Latimer style, right? Is that
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's
the most famous
not,
case in the country. Yeah.
Again, it's not happening because that's against the law. You know, technically you have to be an adult. You have to like almost literally be at death's door. With that, when you know, terminal to be able to get the doctor's permission, then you also have to find a doctor because not every doctor is willing to take part in the program. So that, I mean, there are a number of blocks, which is one of the reasons why Quebec struck it the original law down and sent it back to the House of Commons for reworking. So, I mean, there is that concern from disability advocates, and I think that is perfectly understandable. This is one of those things where it's like you have to have two equal thoughts in your head at the same time about this, because I think there is the point of view of disability advocates about concerning about expanding this, concerned about the people they represent, you know, kind of being swept up in things like maybe cost-benefit analysis, like is it worth keeping this relative alive when there's no chance of recovery, or there's no like medically no chance of recovery. You know, it becomes a matter of ableism, right? And at the same time, though, and I think this is where the government is coming from, I think it's a very kind of tunnel vision approach where it's like we are setting up like a matter of fact law here where we're talking about individuals and individuals enacting their rights. And I think, and my thought is like, I think that is fundamentally right, because you know, the idea of being able to choose your own destiny, I think, is inherent with individual rights. But at the same time, and this goes into issues, and I was listening to Sandy and Nora's podcast this week, and they're getting into this.
An excellent podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. It you know, that, As we struggle over this, and people who are concerned about loved ones who may be part of the disabled community, whether that's a mental, physical, or emotional disability, that's a race to the bottom. And we are seeing that in our long-term care homes, where people are living in just putrid conditions in a lot of cases. And is there a way we can, I guess, increase the quality of life on the one hand, so that there are more assurances that people are not being pushed to the direction of medical assisted death as that cost saving measure. And I think that's sort of the human side of this that the debate is missing, because I mean, as an able-bodied person, I sort of get the logic rights driven argument, but on the other hand, I also understand the more emotional, I guess slippery slope concern that a lot of people who have older relatives, disabled relatives, have given the issue.
But and it is the place where advanced directives would make sense, and I guess it turns into a grayer zone when you have power of attorney over someone and they haven't made that choice, right? So it's you become, and I've been in this position where you become completely responsible for somebody, and certain generation is, you know, we're not very specific about anything, let alone whether they assisted death or not. So to get this in line now absolutely has to happen beyond the what's going on with COVID-19 and the pandemic. Now, according to Senator Frances Lankin, she had said that all provinces and territories have end-of-life advance directives in place right now. But the idea of this is to build on that, because right now you can say, I don't want anybody to intervene, I don't want any care, and people do that. Sometimes they do it consciously, and sometimes there are people who will just stop taking food and water because they want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Varying levels of understanding. You know, it's almost a human nature thing where it's like, okay, it's time for me to go. It does happen. But that's the thing right now. You can do that, but is it right to let somebody starve as their way of checking out? If they've made up their mind to go, is it correct to let them do that rather than say, well, if it's going to be a matter of days of suffering, that's probably worse than having an advance directive stamped, sealed, blessed by lawyers or whoever it is to say, at this point, I would like to go, please do this. And I rarely sign petitions, I rarely chime into things, but when they had the input on this, I was right in there on this, because it's just, it affected me personally and deeply, and will in the future too, right? And lots of people know. There is some of the blowback as well. You're talking about the disabled community, and rightly so. There is coming from the faith community as well, particular faith communities who normally chime in on these things, but they're not really basing their defense on science. It's more of a faith-based, which is fine. You know, if that's your opinion, fine. But it's along the lines of, you know, if you don't want this, then don't get it and don't get involved.
I'm so interested to hear you say that, because I had a similar thought, not necessarily from the faith-based advocacy angle, but the comparison to abortion, because ideally we don't want to live in a world where people are just getting abortions willy-nilly. You want to create the conditions where abortion is super accessible, but at the same time super rare. So that means really high quality sex education. That means contraception being available. So, and it also means other measures too, and making sure there's good prenatal care, good care for pregnant mothers, and all that other stuff. But at the end of the day, it's a constitutional right, and it should be available. You shouldn't have to run like halfway across the province in order to get it, like you do now, pretty much.
And it's choice. It is choice, right? You choose when you want to check out. You choose. And as you said, it's not a willy-nilly thing. It's like you choose, you need an abortion, get one. If you don't want one, don't get. That's a song, isn't it? If you don't want. Yeah. I'm hearing this at the dance cave in my head. But yes, they're right.
That's right. And the medically assisted death should be the exact same thing. We should be creating conditions where people do not live in filth, where people do not live in squalor. People should not feel they're a burden to their family. Families should be given support so that they can take care of elderly relatives or relatives with special medical needs. They should have access to that medical care. They should have access to that free time. Just go right down the checklist. And at the end of all this too is being comfortable with having the conversation too, and having that checklist handy. It's like, if this happens to me, let's go ahead with MAID. If this happens to me, well, I'm okay with that. That will lead to, you know, it's a matter of preparation. And that's a scary conversation. I don't doubt it. I have not had to have that conversation yet, fortunately, but it is. It is a matter of looking at one's own mortality, but it really should be that kind of, there really should be that kind of thinking behind it. It should be there when you need it, and it should be understood that it is sort of like the option of last resort. But if you choose it, that is your right.
Well, and that's exactly it. The conversation is the key. The legislation is one thing, but people for generations have not talked about this. And if anything comes out of this, that is what has to happen. But we shall see. So probably more on this on a future date for sure. But for now, we are going to take a little bit of a break, play some ads, a little bit of music, and then we will be back in short order. So stick around. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM. Stay tuned. ¶¶ That was our Royal Cat Records pick of the week. Royal Cat Records, if you're listening on February 18th, is actually open this weekend, so check their website for their hours, and you'll be able to check out their vinyls soon enough. That's from an album called Oscar's Choice. Oscar Peterson, someone who now has a brand spanking new Canadian moment. I didn't think they were making those anymore, but it would seem that they are, and yeah, that song was called Blues for HG. I'm not sure which HG that is. HG Wells? No, probably not. But high quality stuff. That's from BASF. The chemical company had a record division. So again, I should probably just cave and host a music show. But there's enough to do in this life, right, Adam?
Too much, actually.
Movie shows, musical shows, and political shows. So we better get back to that. The Newfoundland election, unprecedented. They shut the whole thing down. Bruce Chalk, the chief electoral officer in Newfoundland, Labrador, said, nope, this has to stop. And moved to a complete mail-in ballot, which I believe the deadline is tomorrow for people to get their ballot.
Them in the mailbox by tomorrow.
What's that?
You got to drop them in the mailbox by tomorrow.
Oh, really? I thought it was the you have to get your kit, as they're calling it.
Maybe. I thought it was you had to drop them in the mailbox by tomorrow because they have to get them by the 5th. But maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I believe it's you have to have your kit, and then they do have to have it by the 5th. So everything is super compressed. I heard one, I think it was Global, referred to this as a, quote, makeshift election, which is very true. But the move to a mail-in ballot is not completely unprecedented, but at this level it is. And ironically, I remember reading your article in the Today on the weekend, the Market Square, about advocating very strongly for mail-in ballots. I know it's a little bit different scenario, but it probably is the most solid way to go. Although I think part of the problem in Newfoundland, Labrador is going to be getting the kit in time, because one of the main ways to do it is, of course, online. Now, it sounds like they've knocked together a call center or have appropriated a call center to deal with everybody who doesn't have internet access or has patchy internet access and some of those, some rural, we'll call them rural areas. But so as to whether there is some talk about, you know, is this a mail-in ballot is probably the way to go, but considering the circumstances, is it the most fair, considering a lot of people will in all likelihood be left out of this?
Right. It's important to note, too, that there was always going to be a mail-in component to the election, but it was going to be combined with in-person voting. And what ended up happening is, because Newfoundland started getting their first cases of community spread of COVID, there were a rough couple of days there where the chief electoral officer, Chalk is his name, Bruce Chalk, they shut down in-person voting just on the Avalon Peninsula. And then they shut down in-person voting for the whole province, but not before Chalk was coming out and saying, like, we need all the party leaders to come and meet with the lieutenant general to decide what's going to happen. And then they were like, you know, we're going to try pausing the election. No, we're not going to pause the election. We're going to move forward. It's going to be all mail-in. It's been kind of a mess. A mess all the way through. And sorry, I had to.
No, that's a good way to. good summation. Yep.
Oh, that idiot will never change our lives forever anyway. It's been a mess. And the question is, why is it such a mess? Was there really no kind of worst case scenario planning? Why are they even? I mean, because this isn't a fixed date election. It is in the sense that you have an election has to be called within a year when there's a new premier sworn in, and the current Premier Fury, he was elected last year by the Liberal Party. So he as the leader of the Liberal Party, Liberal Party's in control. He elevated the level of premier. And so they have to have an election within a year. But why are they having an election in the middle of winter in Newfoundland when the second wave was in full effect? And yeah, the Maritimes have been very better. That's horrible English.
Very better.
have been better in terms of dealing with community spread and stopping community spread of the virus, this is the first instance of community spread in Newfoundland and Labrador since last April, which is amazing. But every epidemiologist and doctor and medical professional were saying winter is going to be bad. Beware the Ides of winter. That's not a thing. But the warnings were there, and Fury decided to continue on with the election regardless, instead of like waiting for, I don't know, spring.
Well,
so,
and I think with the variants looming, maybe the assumption was, well, we could probably beat this, but of course, as we know, timing is everything in these things, and they got hit bang on with this, because I mean, really, I wouldn't say the whole pandemic, but it was always like, oh, and there is a case in Newfoundland and Labrador, or two or three. But I mean, they had 1 week last week where it was 100, which is unprecedented there. And, you know, people should keep in mind that Newfoundland and Labrador is an area of 500,000 people. So it's not the most populous place. But when this is proving, as everyone's saying, when the variants do come, the game changes. And I think this is a bit of a harbinger of what is going to happen here. It's a bit of an aside, I guess, from the election itself. But we're going to see more of this. And I think we're going to see more elections canceled or postponed, and I think that's why, well, it was three other provinces had them last year, right, to get them out of the way, so to speak. Like, well, let's do this now. And there's, why are they doing this now? It's like, well, because they were wondering when COVID is going to get worse. Well, that moment is now, of course, right?
Well, so, there was also this cynical calculation by a lot of provincial governments. It's like, we're getting great ratings due to our COVID response, so let's go to an election when we're guaranteed a majority victory. You know, look to Nova Scotia, look to BC.
A snap, as we used to call it. Can we still call it a snap election? Because I don't know if everything is snap right now, and snapped to some degree, I suppose. I didn't realize Conservatives and Liberals are the only official parties in Newfoundland. NDP have, I guess, tried to double their complement of candidates this time around. There's 40 seats. Is it right? 40 seats?
40 seats, yeah.
NDP are running in 33. And then there is another party called the Newfoundland Alliance, I think along the lines of traditional alliances that we've seen in Canada. And they don't have any status at all. I think they have six candidates or something. But I don't think that Bruce Chalk has confirmed or has had any discussions with the parties, and that is something that they were asking for.
Right.
Well, I can't remember his first name. That's Crombie's son. John Crombie's son, right, is the leader of the Conservatives. Is that right? Sorry to put you on the spot there.
Maybe.
I was just like,
I don't know. I don't know.
I should probably have done the homework before that, but I was like, that has to be, you know. it is the kind of place where people stay in Paul, you know, the family passes down the political torch, I think. So they wanted to have discussions with the chief electoral officer, but that didn't happen. I guess he didn't want to seem, at least he said he didn't want to seem partisan, but it is a tough situation completely. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, because I'm pretty sure the rest of the provinces and other places are going to have elections, perhaps federal as well. We'll be taking notes as to how the next one is going to be run, right?
Yes, and John Chris Crosby is indeed John Crombie's son, or John Crosby's son.
Thank you, Google.
Yeah, no, it's taking notes. Yes, I think the biggest note though is I think you're right. I think there were a lot of things going on. They wanted to outrace the clock. They wanted to, you know, get ahead of the variants. Fury wanted to take advantage of the political situation. He had like 50% of the last Main Street poll on the 10th put him at 50 some odd percent approval. And that's pretty good. You know, that's well into – that's, you know, seats – you know, seat calculations and all that, but I mean that is easily in majority territory, and they ended the legislation, the legislative session with 19 seats. There was one seat open. The Liberals won the last election with 20 seats, so they've just barely made it in getting that majority. It's just there was a complete lack. Something fell apart here. And I mean, it's not like people died or whatever. It's like democracy is over in Newfoundland and Labrador. But there is some serious questions about why winter? Why was there no backup plan? Why not just go all mail in to begin with? And I think that's to go back to what you were saying about Guelph's own mail-in plan. First of all, it's for the municipal election that's next year, so hopefully there will be some degree of normalcy by 18 months from now.
Oh, I sure hope so. This bunker is getting tiresome, but yes.
But even at that, you know, the clerk's office here has to plan ahead for like postal strikes. Could there be like a snap strike? Like, what is their contract situation and that kind of thing? So it's just, you know, there somebody at Elections NL wasn't thinking things all the way through, or somebody in the premier's office or in the leader's office was just so eager to get down to electing and you know, getting that majority and coming right back and not having to worry about an election for 4 years that they weren't really thinking ahead about it being winter and it being in the middle of the second wave and there being COVID variants about. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, and there were cases of candidates too catching COVID and, you know, being out on the campaign trail. It's just
bad scene all around.
Something went really, really wrong. Like, I think this election is the victim of somebody's ambitions, and I think that needs to be raked out.
And just quickly, in terms of issues, I keep seeing different articles, but there was one in Maclean's talking about how Newfoundland is very much in the hole economically to the tune of $16 billion. And as I said, this is a province of 500,000 people. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can't recover that on taxes. So that is whoever wins, that is definitely going to be one of the key issues for them beyond COVID and beyond everything else that's going on. But as of course, as always, we wish them well. So we'll do. Mm-hmm. We might do a bit of a roundup because I think it's going to get interesting before it's all over. Speaking of interesting, the lockdown caucus. I hadn't actually heard of this.
It's end the lockdown caucus.
End the lockdown caucus. I've been calling the lockdown caucus. end the lockdown caucus. Yes, I do have that in the notes. They should just end it. Round up the usual suspects. The picture that you put on our webpage there. Who's who of the conspiracy fringe had a meeting in a garage? Bernier. The news outlets weren't there, but Rebel News, Post-Millennial, True North News have all chimed in on this. The usual propaganda arms of this gang. Hillier there, Sloan. But also, on a local note, Stephen Van Leeuwen. Is that right? I had never heard of this person. Center Wellington councillor, just up the road. Sounds like there was a bit of a battle going on at their meeting. Did you go to their council meetings? Well, I mean, you have 100% attendance for Guelph, but have you ever sat in on anything Center Wellington or?
I have not, and I think they only recently started putting the meetings on YouTube.
Right.
I mean, it's tougher with some of the smaller councils.
Sure.
I mean, it's also not technically my beat. I kind of keep one eye on it because I collect all that kind of stuff for the newsletter, and I peek open the Wellington Advertiser website every now and then. So
I missed that paper, but anyway, so they had a screen capture of the Zoom meeting, and it's Van Leeuwen is highlighted. He's the deputy mayor up there, and I guess the integrity commissioner is going to investigate as to whether he should stay the deputy mayor, which is an appointment. You're not elected to it because of him joining the End the Lockdown caucus.
Mm-hmm.
So as to not sure what's going to happen there. It's being left to the integrity commissioner. But you would hope that somebody who was deputy mayor might not want to be the person that's shirking public health orders, meeting with other anti-maskers, traveling to go to that meeting, and just defying all emergency orders all around. I mean, I don't know if that's the person that you want to represent your county, your Center Wellington or wherever, so that we'll see where that goes. But it's no surprise that they're making an effort to kind of get rid of him that way. I don't think they can kick him off council, but you can definitely lose your ceremonial title for joining the caucus.
Right, and it was, I think it was Mayor Linton and Senator Wellington that brought the motion to have him removed as deputy mayor, and it might have passed, but there were a couple of councilors on Senator Wellington that were like, well, we should really have the integrity commissioner weigh on in this. And I think that because they're thinking like you're thinking, can you have someone carry the title of deputy mayor who is sort of actively working against public health advice? And not just public health advice, because the mayor and council are following the advice of well, I guess they're also represented by Dr. Mercer and the Wellington Dufferin Guelph Public Health. And of course Dr. Mercer famously was, I think, the first medical officer of health to come out with a mandatory mask order almost a year ago. So she's been kind of ahead of the curve on a lot of this, and you know, other health units have been trying to keep up with her. So I, you know, it just, you're right, it's a super bad look. But it, however, it's not a bad look as Daryl Herlick, who is a councillor in Perth County. He resigned his seat on the Stratford Perth Board of Health today because he is one of the founding members of the End the Lockdown Caucus.
And he
was
obviously, he was on the Board of Health.
He was on the Board of Health, and he resigned his seat, saying he did not want to distract from the good work of the Board of Health. And I'm like,
that's bizarre. That's more bizarre.
Yeah,
that's like the weirdest one of all of them. You know, you expect it from guys like Hillier and Sloan, who are both from areas that are green, by the way, like down that way past Kingston. You know, they're not in any lockdown at all. So.
Right.
Now, what are you whining about?
And also have no authority at all, I should say. When they were members of the government or members of the major parties, they didn't have any, you know, they weren't part of the shadow cabinet or anything like that. It's particularly bizarre, which, I mean, makes you wonder how much of this is like, I have a straight up political, moral, intellectual disagreement with the way the pandemic is being managed, and how much of it is trolling, and how much of it was like this Daryl Herlick guy thinking like, yeah, I'm going to get some followers on Twitter and I'm going to score some cheap political points, dunking on, you know, the local provincial pandemic response. And then he comes out and he's part of this bizarro caucus with, you know, Mad Max Bernier and Hillier, who, you know, drove several hundred kilometers out of his way.
I would have done. Yeah.
That was sticking it to Waterloo region by opening and having services. And, you know, Derek Sloan, who, you know, is now famous for getting kicked out of the Conservative caucus. It, you know, why would you do that when you're on public health and you're part of discussions? And, you know, I don't know every discussion that happens at Board of Health, because they do have closed in camera sessions. But I have been to a lot of Board of Health meetings virtually in the last year. And this is like kind of where the, you know, the soup of the policy is being made, and the public health officials are having to explain themselves in a bit more detail than what you might get out of a press release or a city council meeting even. It's just, you know, you are at the table, you understand why the decisions are being made. So why, you know, if you don't want to be on the board to draw attention away from this, then why were you doing it in the first place?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is to be a troll, because that's what matters more.
Yeah, because you would think if that was your opinion and you so strongly wanted to say, and you were on the Board of Health, then you would stick it out. But, I mean, maybe he was just wanted to run away from the ridicule he's probably going to face from most people, because that's where this goes, right? The interesting part to me about this, and it's a kind of organizing that we don't see in Canada, is the fact that it's municipal people, it's like councillors and Reeves, but it's also sitting MLAs, sitting, well, if you include Sloan, federal person, right? Because, I don't know how many it is in Alberta, because of course Alberta's a bit of a hotbed for this too. So this is right across the country. And I think Kenny Premier Kenny was like, well, you know, it's their right to, the usual free speech thing. Well, it's their right to belong to these things if they want to, said in his Kenny way. I don't have any names, but I know there are assorted Alberta MLAs on this coalition, or in the End the Lockdown Caucus, which, what is the Liberty Coalition of Canada? I don't know if this is the body that they've created to consolidate all of these people beyond the seated MPs and MPPs, but have you heard of them? They're seeking to provide formal challenges to current COVID-19 policies. So I don't know if it's just they've gathered a bunch of lawyers together to back this gang.
I did note because it seems related. I guess it's to borrow the phrase Liberty Coalition. It is because they have End the Lockdown Caucus, Save Our Youth, Open Small Business, and The Church Must Gather. Because I did notice that the lawyer that was representing Trinity Church in Waterloo Region was also representing a similar church. So I think there's actually a very small conclave of resources for people in these corners.
Yep.
So I think that's...
I'm wondering if they were in on the BC ruling, because they would have had to have lawyers. The church is opening in... the BC Supreme Court said that the court shouldn't be the enforcers of these laws. Come up with something else. So it sounds like there's some churches in BC that are going to be able to open. Even though, not a human rights, but a constitutional argument. That's like, or the fact that the government hasn't said, okay, you need to do this rather than the court saying it. The freedom argument, I guess. And people should be reminded that there really is no biblical argument that you have to meet on 10:30 on a Sunday or whatever to take your pick on a Sunday. It's not in there. It really, truly is not in there. So where this is coming from, it's not coming from the Bible, not to pick on Christians at all. But that's their argument. It's like, well, this is what we are supposed to do. It's like, actually, not really. So the whole hog with the churches, right? They're just won't let it go. So what is the end result of that going to be? Once the variants show up, is that when we're going to see a change there? I don't know.
Well, I mean, keep in mind, too, that there are also a lot of churches that have been quietly doing their services online via YouTube, having parishioners.
The majority, right? Of all faiths.
Yeah. And I mean, Guelph Muslim Society has been doing this. They've compensated. And they've been doing it quietly. They've been doing it every week without much fuss. And again, it comes back to this idea of trolling. And I think that there are some people who learn the exact wrong lesson from that whole barbecue debacle in Etobicoke, which is like, if you show up that you're quote-unquote standing up to the man, you can get a lot of people who are going to come out and support you, and you're going to get a wicked awesome promotion. I really think that was what was behind this, especially that Trinity Church, because they love teeth, like, maybe we will open this Sunday, maybe we won't. And
yeah, you're getting national press, right? So that I do think that's a part of it, for sure. Your name is on everyone's lips. Like, what's with that barbecue guy? What's with that church? I'd never heard of these places. I had heard of Hildebrandt because of the child beating, but not because of this garbage. So,
and then you see it. I mean, it's also happening in the Ontario legislature, because you had this guy, what's his face? Randy something. Roman Barber.
Oh, yeah.
Got kicked out of the PC caucus. But he introduces a bill this week to make everyone in the legislature get paid $500 a week, because that's how much the CERB costs, until all the lockdown and state of emergency stuff is over. And it gets thrown. It doesn't get unanimous consent, so it goes nowhere. And then Paul Calandra gets up and it's like, I'm going to make a motion to make you get paid $500 until this is over. And it's like, no, don't. Like, I have no faith in Paul Calandra to begin with, but I mean, don't engage the trolls. Yeah, don't engage trolls.
Very weird.
That's what that guy was doing.
He
was
very saying. Weirdly, that proposal is like a very socialist counselor thing to do. It's like, I'm going to take the wages of a working person. So I don't know where that guy's coming from. He belongs with the rest of this lockdown caucus and the lockdown caucus. And more on that at a future date. But we are rapidly running out of time, Adam. So quickly tell the people where they can find out about you and what you do.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to GuelphPolitico.ca.
I'm Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. We are heard here every Thursday at 5 p.m. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify if you want to catch up with this show, which is open source as Guelph. Thank you so much for joining us once again, and we're going to keep on rolling here with more programming. But so please stick around, and thank you for joining us. Take care.